Great. Okay. So thank you so much for having me here this morning. Again, just want to echo what a great joy it is to be with you. I know that as a church, you have supported Tear Fund for a number of years, well into our history and individually as well. So thank you so much. You are the guys that are making it what it is that mean that we can fulfill part of our vision of where we want to be. So this morning, we heard a little bit about the passage. We read through the passage in Mark about the feeding of the 5,000. And we're going to come back to that over the course of the morning. But first of all, just to give you a little bit about me. So I work for Tear Fund. I've been with Tear Fund for about 11 years now. And actually, I think when I started, I just saw it as a foot in the door to saving the world, to international development, and feeling that it was God's call on my life. And as I started working more at Tear Fund and understanding a bit about what we were doing and how we think about development and the local church, that changed my perspective. And I realized I wasn't going to be the one that was going to save everyone, that was going to change this world, but actually the power of the local church and the church where they are to do what they've been called to do. So that transformed how I thought about Tear Fund and the role that Tear Fund has to play. And I don't know, but some of you might be aware that just over a year ago, Tear Fund celebrated our 50th birthday, which I don't know if many people were around when that started and remember what that was about or what it was like. But it was back in 1968. And if you were around at that time, I've been informed that there were those small black and white televisions that often crackled a little bit, maybe didn't tune in very well. Took a couple minutes to warm up. Thankfully, we don't have those today. Nothing like what we have today. But I think that was probably the first time, especially in UK history, where we actually saw what was going on in the world. And at that time was the Biafra crisis, the Nigerian Civil War. And it was just incredible to see the response of Christians in this country. As Christians were seeing what was on the television, and yet they would come to church on a Sunday and they would hear about God's provision and God's grace, and they just knew that this was not right. This was not what God wanted. And so they responded. It was very much a bit like a heart cry, not really knowing what to do, but seeing a distress on the television and wanting to step out and act, feeling God's call on their heart. And so the Evangelical Alliance, who you may be familiar with, received a handful of donations. They just came in the post, and they'd be like, what do you do with this? What do you do with these gifts? How do we use that? And so that's where Tear Fund got its name, if you don't know, the Evangelical Alliance Relief Fund. And so that's how we set up. And what started off as probably quite difficult accounting and passing money across to Nigeria at that time actually has come into an organization that has saved millions of lives. In the last year alone, Tear Fund provided life-saving emergency to help over 1 million people. In fact, 3.8 million people were helped through our long-term development work. But that seems like a bit of a drop in the ocean. After all, I think we still see the news, we still have our televisions, and we're seeing starving children in Yemen, Syria, parts of the world such as sub-Saharan Africa. But there is some good news, and often I think it does get brushed over. We don't hear about it because we hear so much of the difficulty that's going on. That the number of people living in absolute poverty has dramatically reduced in our lifetime. So, I've got a few stats here. I'm going to read those. The World Bank's estimate is that in 1980, there was about 44% of the world's population that was living on less than $2 a day. As they've looked at the figures for 2015, so it was a few years back now, they reckon that that figure had dropped to 9%. Which is pretty impressive. So from 44% to 9%. And actually, in that time, the world's population has grown from 4.5 billion to over 7 billion. So that is something to celebrate, and I don't think we hear that very often. And so it can feel a bit like a golden age. We're in this space where we're seeing poverty reduce, except we do know that that isn't extended to everyone. And there are around 600 million people that are still trapped in what we would call extreme poverty. Tear Fund's vision is to see an end of absolute poverty in our lifetimes. And we believe that this is part of God's call for humankind. And we hear about that. You know, we've been reading from the scriptures this morning, but we know that God has a bigger picture. He has a bigger kingdom vision of all that's in store. The vision of John in Revelation, it's not just a daydream. There's a picture there of what God has done and what he is doing and will continue to be doing. God, through the Spirit, is and will continue to be working in the world to reveal his kingdom until the end. When he makes all things new, when he renews, he reperfects his creation as heaven comes to earth. And this morning, I want to share a little bit of how together we can be part of that story. So Tearfund has a really big vision, but actually we're really excited about it. If it was too small, that would be nothing to achieve. We know that we have a big God and a big God that can do huge things. So I've got a couple of slides and there'll be a few pictures that are a little familiar. Let me just see where we go. So what's in your hand? That's kind of the theme of what we'll be chatting about. And we saw this picture earlier, this picture of Ruth and her family. So Ruth is married with 5 children. 2 of them live at home, and she lives with her husband. And they live in a very poor community, a remote area, with no sanitation and only pond water to drink in a community in Nigeria. Changes in weather patterns and the difficulty in accessing water mean that harvests are poor, and Ruth's family experiences a hunger gap for about 3 months in the year. During that time, it's a struggle every day for Ruth and her husband to know how they're going to feed their family. With her children begging for more food and falling behind because actually they can't afford to go to school for those months, they can't afford to pay the fee, she really needed a breakthrough. And so this is a picture of Ruth, and she is a hard-working woman. We've got a little video that I'd love to play just to show a little bit more of her story. Get that one. Thank you.
Life in this community can be very difficult. What makes life so difficult is a lack of food. My dream is to have enough money to meet all our needs. I will pay for my children's education, build a good house, and have savings to deal with any problems that we face. My name is Ruth, and I am married with 6 children. 3 have left home, and sadly, 1 passed away. So I live with my husband and 2 youngest children. We suffer periods of hunger that sometimes last 5 or 6 months. Then we just eat 1 meal a day, and I have to forage for food and live off the little that we have and are able to grow. I try my very best, but the times when I cannot provide food for my children is a huge problem for me. Sometimes my children are sent away from school because I can't afford to pay the fees. Fetching firewood is our only source of income to take care of the family.
Kokida community is a very poor community, lacking potable drinking water, has poor agricultural practices, but the greatest challenge is inadequate food. We have started addressing the needs of these communities by organizing Church Awakening Bible studies through the support of Tearfund that would eventually help communities lift themselves out of poverty. Through the process, there have been self-help groups that have been formed.
I joined a self-help savings and loans group 1 year ago, and it has helped me make a change in my life. After the first year out, I bought 2 bags of fertilizer. In the past, I harvested 3 to 5 bags of maize, but last harvest yielded 13 bags. The church facilitators also taught us to diversify our crops. If I plant 1 bean and it yields, I can harvest about 70 to 80 beans. I also bought a chicken and 2 pigs, so I thank God for what he has been doing in my life. It awakened me to look for opportunities, and it has helped my faith. Now I put my trust in God. Our farm is very small and not large enough to sell the produce, so I hope to breed livestock. That way, anytime I have a problem, I can sell them to meet our needs, because I have a lot of needs. But still, my most urgent challenge is lack of food and periods of hunger. I want people to pray for me, that God will protect me and God will guide me, that there will be total transformation for my family. I believe the self-help group will bring about that change.
Small changes have started to transform Ruth's life.
With this little, it will one day be something.
Give what you can and see how your gifts are powerful in God's hands.
Thank you. So, as was explained in the film, actually Ruth's main problem is about feeding her children. And just imagine how you would feel if you had to get up every morning and tell your children there was no breakfast or lunch, and sometimes if there was even no dinner. I have a 2-year-old at home, and the first thing she says when she wakes up in the morning is breakfast. She's so excited about breakfast. And to have to tell her no would just be heartbreaking. How would you feel if the money for school fees had run out and your children had been sent home from school? Not even that actually you couldn't pay, but maybe they were in school that day and the teacher said, you know what, you're going to have to go home. How would you feel if the baby was ill, if you couldn't afford the medical fees? So Ruth mentioned in the video that she had 6 children. You may remember I referenced 5. She actually lost a child already quite early on. And so those challenges that are faced on a daily basis of where do you put the money and the resource that you have, who goes with and who goes without, they're the harsh realities of living on less than $2 a day. And they're the facts for nearly 1 billion of our fellow human beings. And that's a real challenge. I don't know about you, but that for me just pains my heart. I want to know what I can do. I call out to God saying there must be more. So TFM, we work through a number of local church partners. One is called the Church of Christ in Nigeria. And we've just been working in Ruth's village, starting a church and community transformation program. A few long words in that. The idea that the church looks at how they can engage and equip their congregation and those around them to address needs locally. And so that's through learning better farming techniques, diversification of crops, which you heard about, a savings group where people are contributing, and actually they only contribute a little bit to start with, and they pull money out of that group as a loan to do something else, to invest somewhere, and then repay it. There is such chronic need across the world, and it just doesn't seem that as we live in the 21st century that people like Ruth should be suffering. Our passage of scripture that we've just read and heard about this morning speaks powerfully about those things. It's a familiar story that we've looked at before, I'm sure you are familiar with. It describes a situation where there is great need. There was a spiritual hunger, people following Jesus and wanting to know what his teaching was and how they could learn from him. But there was also that material hunger. People were actually hungry. They needed to be fed. And that's the same today. We have a huge spiritual hunger out there. The world is full of people who are hungry for spiritual reality, for hope, for peace, for the meaning to life. Whatever the national statistics might show for the UK, the church is actually rapidly growing across large parts of the world. People want to know. Material hunger across the world. Well, with 1 billion people like Ruth living in extreme poverty, it still exists. So the story that we heard, the feeding of the 5,000. Oh, let me go back one. I think for me it raises 2 questions and 2 areas for us to think about. So first, what's our responsibility to those in need? And second, how can we best help those in need? So I'm just going to spend a few minutes looking at both those questions. And I think this first question about our responsibility, from verse 34 in Mark 6. When Jesus landed, he saw a large crowd, and he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. So he began teaching them many things. And in other Gospels, when this story is told, it says that Jesus healed the sick. So he does the physical stuff. And this story goes on, and we see how he is concerned for the hungry, for the lack of food that is there. Jesus is not only bothered about the spiritual side of their lives, but their physical need as well. And he demonstrates that clearly God is also involved and wants to know in every aspect of a person's life. When Jesus landed and saw the large crowd, he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. By contrast, there is a limit to the disciples' compassion, and there's probably that for me too. They are tired and inclined to leave the people to find their own food. As we read verses 35 and 36, by this time it was late in the day, so his disciples came to him. "This is a remote place," they said, "and it's already very late. Send the people away so they can go to the surrounding countryside and villages and buy themselves something to eat." They've already done a lot of ministry that day, and now they wanted to head home. They want to do their equivalent of what might be settling in for the night, maybe snuggling up on the sofa, watching Strictly, maybe binge-watching some Netflix or something. And I know I often feel like that. When there is so much that you are facing, so much need, maybe conversations that you're in, things that you can see in your doorstep, actually, what's the easier thing to do? Often, the easier thing is to just close the door. I don't want to be inconvenienced, and there are limits to what I'm prepared to do and where I feel happy to help with and what's within my comfort zone. It's easy to look away and switch off, except there is a problem, because actually Jesus is challenging us to respond. The disciples, they wanted to go home. I would have wanted to go home. But Jesus doesn't let them off the hook so easily. In verse 37, Jesus says, "You give them something to eat." So he calls us to respond with compassion. We have a responsibility to those in need. We can't just turn the blind eye, absorbed by the appetites of our own culture, our own things that feed us. Maybe that's, you know, our own pleasures, our own watching habits or eating habits. Actually, we are called to look at those that are living in poverty, whether that be in our country, in our doorstep, and further away. We need to be careful not to limit the scope of the gospel, the kingdom of God. It is far-reaching, and Jesus challenges us to consider how to care for those in need as part of our responsibility as Christians. Throughout Scripture, we see that God has a bias to the poor, a special concern for widows, orphans, immigrants, and the poor. And so just that second question, about how can we best help those in need. And it's a deeper question, and there are some fascinating insights for this story. The disciples' response is to challenge, to feed everyone, is one of disbelief. That would cost the earth. We could spend half a year's wages buying food for all these people. They can't imagine how it might be possible to feed 5,000 men, and that really only seems to count for the men. There's probably women and children there as well. Possibly over 10,000 in reality. So they were feeling really overwhelmed at the prospect of trying to meet such a great need. And we can feel that as we've been sharing. And where Ruth lives in Nigeria, it's a country that has some extremes. So despite the fact that it has an immense resource and pockets of wealth, Nigeria still suffers from widespread poverty. Food shortages that affect millions of people, and years of crippling military rule that have left Nigeria's population vulnerable to conflict. In fact, in 7 years of conflict, more than 20,000 people have been killed in attacks led by the militia group Boko Haram. Around 1.7 million people have been forced out of their homes by conflict and are now living in displaced areas, displaced people camps. And an estimated 7.7 million people are in need of humanitarian assistance. the northeast of Nigeria is where we see so much of the conflict on the ground and is on the brink of famine at the moment. With critically low levels of food and the need for peace, there are about 86.9 million Nigerians. That's 50% of the country, which is around 180 million in population. 86.9 million that are living in extreme poverty. Nigeria now has the largest population living in extreme poverty in the world. And so we could look at that problem and we could stare and wonder and think, well, actually, this is huge. How can we do anything like the disciples were? The disciple asks, how can we feed all these people? We could spend the half year wages buying the food for all these people. And we might ask, how can we solve the world's problems? How can the problems in Nigeria ever be solved? But Jesus has something very different in mind to the disciples, and he sees things differently. Notice Jesus' question. How much bread do you have? In other words, what do you have in your hands? Not what don't you have, don't tell me what you don't have, but what have you got in your hands? And you can imagine the scene, and I'm sure we've done it in lots of sketches in Sunday schools or up on a Sunday morning at the front. Often you picture a kind of a boy with his lunch, you know, with his five loaves and two fish. It's very little to serve over 5,000 people. But Jesus says, that's okay, and that's enough. We're going to use what we have with our Father in heaven. That is just fine. How bold is that? When we see something amazing happen, the disciples did just as Jesus told them. He blessed the food that they were going to distribute. And next to nothing, what was so little, a bit like how we saw the corn earlier, became so much more that the disciples ended up picking up leftovers. Can you imagine 12 baskets of leftover food when they thought there was hardly anything there? With God, less is more. There is enough to feed everyone with food left over. The miracle takes place because Jesus sees the situation differently. He has a different perspective on what's going on and finds a different way to address the problem. He doesn't focus on their lack of what they don't have. Instead, he looks at what they do have. And that's just how Tear Fund works and how we encourage the churches we work with globally to work. We don't get them to focus on what they don't have, but rather to turn it around and say, what do you have? What are the things that are around you? Is that giftings? Is that a piece of land that you can put to use in a different way? It brings about a mindset change. And actually, that mindset change is more than just, you know, helping yourself, but actually, how does God view you? God has a huge value on you and your life. So when Ruth's church and her congregation was helped to understand this space and this story and other Bible passages like it, how God is concerned not only for her spiritual life, but what it means for her day-to-day, for her family, Ruth had a fresh encounter with God that helped her discover God's love and care for her. So we heard she started in a self-help group. So that's one of the ways, one of the models we're working with, where groups put a little penny in, a couple pennies in every week, and then they share what they've got. They invest in each other and they put back. As a result, she was able to have a loan to borrow fertilizer, buy fertilizer. So her crop yields have rocketed. She's been able to make a few changes in the way she farms her fields, which will make a difference in the future to the volume of crops. She's been able to learn new planting methods. We heard about the beans and how much that was yielding and the diversity with which she was planting. And so less has become more for Ruth. Now she has dignity of meeting her family's needs and not depending on handouts. And Ruth's story shows how God can take whatever we can give and use the gifts to transform people's lives. We give and he multiplies our efforts. She has learned to use the little in her hands just as the disciples use the little in their hands. So Tirfan's been working in development for about 50 years. It's been quite a long time. And have found new ways of addressing poverty. And that has changed over time as we've seen what works or what doesn't, and really dug deeper in understanding what the local church can do and what the church is called to do. So rather than coming from the outside now with our ideas and our resources, which is really easy to do and which is what I thought I was going to do, actually we try and look at how we can help release the potential of those people that are within that community. What God has given them, their energies, their gifting, their skills. And it adds value to those individuals. So we're helping churches and their communities to find sustainable solutions. It's long-term. It goes beyond many other agencies because you're looking at what is there, not what do we need to keep shipping in. So since about 2001, we've reached more than 10 million people across 41 countries in this sort of work. And what's phenomenal is the scale of that. We were hearing how it doesn't actually cost you that much to be involved and to participate for this kind of work because it's about how people engage where they are, mainly through having gone through Bible studies. And so I'd like to just refer you to, there are cards on your seats. And I'm not sure I got quite up to the top up there, sorry, in the balcony, but I will happily hand you on the way out. But on there is a card. And it might just look like a piece of paper. And as you open it up, you'll see that there is some information in there. There's a picture of Ruth. And as I mentioned earlier, we believe at Tear Funds that we could see the end, absolute end of poverty in our lifetime. And we've done a little bit of maths on that. We think that about £12 a month would help two people, one like Ruth, to go through a training program over the year. So £6 a month would help one person to go through that, to join a self-help group program, to be able to feed their family, to be able to see more of what they can do, and to understand God's value of them. So the card is in front of you. And if you would like to, I would love to invite you to join us and to join Tear Fund in that journey. I can't share about what I hear and what I hear is happening in Nigeria and across the world without offering that as an opportunity for all of us to engage in some way. If you don't have your bank details, don't worry. Just scribble in a telephone number. My colleagues would love to call and to chat. So please do feel that you can fill that in. And pass that to me. I'll be at the back at the end. And I might try and get into the coffee as well before I leave. But this is an opportunity to see how God could use something quite small to do something much larger. So we're going to have a little chance to pray now. It'd be wonderful if you feel happy praying in twos and threes, or maybe a time to reflect on your own. And I guess there are a few things that I've pulled up that I'd love for us to think about in our time of prayer. So we've been hearing about Ruth and her family, and her kids that she has at home, how she is diversifying what she is doing. So let's hold her up in prayer, as a symbol of that community and others that are being helped in this way. We know that it's actually quite a tricky area in northern Nigeria, especially, that there are political tensions that are running high, that there are divisions, politics and faith and communities. So let's pray for some peace, because we're seeing a lot of tragedy, a lot of death in a space where we would love to see God's hand at play. For local church leaders and the church partners that we work with as Tear Fund, for their protection and their ongoing commitment to serve this area in what can be quite a challenging space. We're talking about those that were displaced and those that were hungry, so being aware that we have about 7 million people looking for humanitarian assistance. And then I think one of the biggest challenges when we're praying is always about ourselves and our commitment, and I'd love for you to spend a time thinking about that. And it's more than just signing a card, actually. You know, God has given each of you in this room some gifting and some talent. He's given that to you, not to everyone else. And that's for you to use to help build his kingdom and to bring glory to his name, to see his kingdom on earth, in Slough, in the places that you work, in the communities that you serve, in the activities that you do. So use this time as well to think about not just what does that mean for your engagement with Tear Funds as you pray for Nigeria and the rest of the world, but what does God ask of you? I know that you've been reflecting a little bit about that, and that Micah passage is always such a powerful one. What is God asking of you, not just here on the seat, but as you go into the week ahead, as you serve your church and serve your community? So I would encourage you to pray in twos or threes, or spend a bit of time just reflecting on your own. We have some images that we'll put on like a roll, and then I'll close in prayer in a couple of minutes' time. Thank you.